Warren's right as a staff writer for The New Yorker and Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Looming Tower. He's now written a revealing new book about the Church of Scientology, Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. It's based on more than 200 interviews with former and current Scientologists, as well as other sources. The book offers an exhaustive account of the church from its founding by L. Ron Hubbard to its present-day leadership. It's a great pleasure to welcome Lawrence Wright to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Joe.
What got you on the subject originally?
I've always been curious about religious beliefs, which in my experience as a reporter are so much more powerful and transformative in people's lives and in societies than politics, which is the main meat of my profession. So religion is, you know, I stand in awe of its ability to change people for good and ill.
When you decide to take on a project like this, are there challenges from the very beginning? Just given the myths and the misunderstandings, I assume, around Scientology itself.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, it's an organization that everybody's heard of and few people know very much about. Mainly, people know about it through their celebrity spokespeople, and it's often, you know, ridiculed, like on South Park and things like that. What people don't really understand is that, you know, there are terrible abuses that have been alleged to have been committed inside the highest levels of the church. And many families have told me about their heartache, about families being torn apart, and people being told to disconnect in Scientology jargon from other people that they're close to. So it's, you know, it's a story with a lot of dimensions and a lot of tears.
When you talk about the tears, let us first have a baseline of knowledge, which is this all comes from L. Ron Hubbard, who is a science fiction writer, and the origins of Scientology came from where? When did we first start to see this form?
The Church of Scientology was created in Los Angeles, really Hollywood, in 1954, and there was a reason for that. Hubbard had a vision, and I think he was prophetic in this, that celebrity is really a church and you know, a spiritual goal in America. And so he set up his church in Hollywood, knowing that if he could just get these exemplary pitchmen, that celebrities that would represent the church to the public, it would spread far and wide. And early on in the church's history, a list of prospective Scientologists was published in one of their magazines, and they included people like Bob Hope and Walt Disney, John Ford, Marlene Dietrich, some of the most famous people of the era. And all along, the church was hoping to reel in such an exemplary figure. And they did get, you know, a lot of stars, and you know, not all of them so well known at that time. Gloria Swanson, who was the fated, you know, the star of silent movies, Stephen Boyd, Rock Hudson walked in the door for a while. Elvis Presley bought some books. Of course, his widow and daughter are still prominent members of the church.
What did it offer them? What did it offer the people who were coming in? A message and a belief system that allowed what?
Well, people typically go into the church for two reasons. One, they are spiritual seekers, and they may have tried out many different religions and found them lacking for some reason or another. And another source is people who have some sort of problem in their life, and they're looking for a solution. Oftentimes, the church will ask you, what is ruining your life? What is your ruin, as they call it? What's standing in the way of your progress intellectually, emotionally, economically? What, you know, what do you need to fix that? Well, the church will offer you a menu of courses, they say, that can help you, and a form of therapy that in Scientology is called auditing, that Scientologists take, and it oftentimes people are helped. You know, when they concentrate on a personal problem with a sympathetic listener and they take courses to address that, it's not surprising that many people report that that Scientology has helped them.
When you look at it on the surface and say, okay, it has helped them, what is it about Scientology that is helpful? What is it that it provides them that would be missing otherwise?
Well, there's two things. One are practical. You know, you might be taking a course in communications, for instance. Jerry Seinfeld, who briefly went into the church, still credits Scientology with helping him gain the confidence he needed to be a stand-up comedian. The other thing that I think that people overlook is, no matter how esoteric or absurd a belief system might be, once you make that declaration that you believe it, you step over a line into a community of people that is, you know, that say they believe the same thing. And some of these, you know, religious communities can be thrilling or oppressive or supportive, but, you know, they're surrounded by this fence of belief that separates them from the outside world. And that's like Scientology is not any different from a lot of other religions in that regard.
I think it's fascinating because one of the things that you wrestle with in the book is just what makes a religion and where to even classify Scientology.
Well, you know, you and I can talk about, you know, is it a religion or is it a cult or so on, and it doesn't matter. The only opinion that matters is that of the IRS. And it's an agency very ill-equipped to make such distinctions. But in 1993, the IRS ruled that Scientology was a religion. And, at the time, Scientology owed $1 billion in back taxes. It would have gone out of business if the IRS had not made that distinction. And during the campaign to get that exemption, the Church of Scientology launched more than 2,400 lawsuits against the IRS and individual members, hired private investigators to track down agents and see if they're drinking too much or fooling around on the road. It was a very bitter campaign, and in the end, the IRS did give them their tax exemption, and part of the deal was all those lawsuits would be dropped.
When you look at the people who are involved, in many cases, as you mentioned, celebrities who are involved with the church, we hear so many stories about how this religion, how Scientology really identifies them and they become the spokesman, they become the spokespeople for this particular religion. And as you say, as you pointed out, that's by design. But I mean, you really have to fully believe and have it work for you to be so, have someone like Tom Cruise to be so forceful in his belief and coming out and talking about this particular subject.
Well, these celebrities are really treated differently from other Scientologists. And there are really three tiers of Scientology. You know, one at the very top are the celebrities, the names of Scientologists that you and I know, the public is well aware of. And then there are public Scientologists, you know, people who walk in the door of the church and maybe take some courses, maybe go up the ladder. And those people really are pretty much free to walk away, even though they'll be followed by mailers and telephone calls for the rest of their lives, probably, because the church is very avid about hanging on to memberships. And then there's a third tier, which is the clergy, and that's called the Sea Org. And it's probably 5,000 members in worldwide, but those people don't have those kinds of liberties to just easily walk away. Many of them have been confined in re-education camps involuntarily for months, sometimes years at a time. I've had 12 of them tell me that they were beaten by the leader of the church, David Miscavige, and more than 20 who have witnessed such assaults. So there's a lot of, there are many allegations of misbehavior that are going on at the top of the church.
David Miscavige is the successor to L. Ron Hubbard, a very tough and driven individual that you write about in the book, very hell-bent on preserving the church after the death of Hubbard. Would we be talking about it, do you think, in the same way if L. Ron Hubbard was still at the helm?
Well, you know, when he was at the helm, he was still a very colorful man up until the day he died, even though he had disappeared from public view for the last 6 years of his life. First of all, let me take my hat off to L. Ron Hubbard. He holds the Guinness Book of World Records for the number of books published, more than 1,000. And, you know, if he were still in charge of the church, would it be the same? You know, he had just made a decision not to pay his taxes for the church. And so when David Miscavige began his campaign to get the tax exemption in 1993, the church owed $1 billion in back taxes. It was definitely going to go out of business. And it was David Miscavige who saved the Church of Scientology. It wouldn't exist if it weren't for him. No matter what people say about his behavior, and I'm certainly one of them, I have to give him credit. He was, you know, in many ways, the Brigham Young of the Church of Scientology. Would not have endured without his campaign to get that tax exemption.
And I asked the question about, would it be the same under Hubbard than it is now under Miscavige, because of the question of the threats and the violence to people who dare leave or question the tenets.
Well, there was violence inside the church and punitive behaviors towards critics and defectors and reporters during Hubbard's era. There are a lot of former members of the Church of Scientology who still consider themselves avid Scientologists, who blame Miscavige for taking it away from Hubbard's original goal. But I think that they're not looking at the fact that Hubbard himself created these re-education camps, and he wrote the policy letters that the church has to follow in order to behave, you know, to punish its critics and so on. He prescribed the behavior that they would have to take, and you can look at those letters and see that the church follows that script up to this day.
When you talk about a script, what does that mean? How is that different than a religious text?
Well, the Church of Scientology regards Hubbard's writings as their scripture, and they're voluminous. I already said more than 1,000 titles.
Right.
And, you know, inside all of that, there are policy letters and bulletins and memos and so on. I don't think anybody in history has ever recorded his own mentality with quite the detail that Hubbard did. And he prescribed answers for every possible question. It's a totalistic universe when you enter the Church of Scientology and go deeper and deeper into it. It's like a breadcrumb trail into the mind of L. Ron Hubbard. And it's that kind of conformity inside that causes the church to react in such a predictable and conformist manner to his original thoughts.
When you look at the people that you talk to through the course of researching this book, who had left the church, what did they feel? Did you find trends in why they left and what they encountered upon leaving?
Yeah, I did. I mean, oftentimes, let's talk about the Sea Org members, because public members can just disappear and you don't really know.
Right.
But Sea Org members oftentimes have to escape. If you're in that organization, it's likely that many, maybe all of your family members are a part of it. You are impoverished because you're only paid $50 a week. If you joined early as a child, as so many of my informants did, you really sacrificed your education. So you have very little to look back on or to fall back on. You've been indoctrinated with the idea you not to trust the outside world, and also with the idea that your eternal salvation is at stake. So all of those things are in the minds of people who are considering leaving. You could try to route out, which is the front door. You say, I'm going to quit. It means that everybody that is dear to you, that is in the church, will never speak to you again unless you pay what's called a freeloader's tab, which often amounts to much more than $100,000. And in effect, it functions as a kind of ransom for the opportunity to keep up the relationships that are very, very meaningful to you. Others simply run away. And when that happens, they're often brought back and confined in a re-education camp for months and sometimes years at a time. So the danger and the prohibition against leaving the Sea Org is quite high, and the consequence is pretty great if you try it.
Given that picture of and using the word escape, so you as a journalist decide you're going to spend 3 years of your life researching this this subject and Scientology, and go and talk to people who are former members and talk to people who are current members and get a sense of what it is like. What pressure do you face from those quote-unquote in charge?
Well, I was quite aware of the history of the church in dealing with its critics, and fortunately I haven't been subjected so far to the kind of private investigators. I mean, they did publish one surveillance photograph of me interviewing a source, but I really haven't felt that I've been surrounded by private investigators. We certainly had a number of stern letters from Scientology lawyers, but that's something I expected to face.
And just by expecting it, does that mean that you, so in looking into it, you know that going in, you know that that's going to be part of the territory in investigating Scientology?
Certainly. I mean, you would be really naive to think that if you're going to write objectively and critically about the Church of Scientology, that they're not going to respond in the most aggressive form that they can. That's their modus operandi, and it's just something that you know going in. The thing is, though, it's such a great story. It's an amazing story, and it was irresistible. So, you know, even though it was surrounded by this kind of electric charge, I just had to write it. It was too interesting.
The subtitle of the book, Scientology, Hollywood and the Prison of Belief. Talk about the prison of belief.
Well, as I mentioned, these re-education camps, and on the Gold Base, which is the international headquarters of the Sea Org in this desert compound in Southern California, there are two double-wide trailers that are married together, and it was a kind of an office suite. And in 2004, David Miscavige decided to clear out all the furniture and put many of his top executives in there to confess their crimes to each other. And at one point, more than 100 people crowded into this, sleeping on the floor, ant-infested, lots of physical abuse. Many people I talked to were beaten. Several witnesses told me that David Miscavige beat him and then made him mop the toilet floor with his tongue. This is the kind of behavior that was going on. And so I ran into an FBI investigation when I was doing my own investigation. And some of my sources were talking to the feds, and I asked them what the feds were telling them. And there was a plan that the FBI had, which was to break into the Gold Base and break into the hole and liberate the prisoners. And my sources said, if you do that, they'll just tell you it's all sunshine and seashells, that they're there for their own good. And the proof of that is that one night, David Miscavige came into the hole with a jam box. And he said he wanted to play musical chairs. He had chairs brought in, and in a circle, and he would play the music and then stop it. It was Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. And as the number of chairs grew diminished, people, fights broke out, clothes were torn, chairs were broken. And what really struck me, you know, he said the consequences, you know, if you're booted out of the game, you'll be thrown out of the Sea Org or sent to distant parts of the globe. You know, husbands and wives will be separated and so on. But what was really remarkable, these were people who were fighting to stay in the hole. And that's what I think of when I think of the prison of belief.
On the subject of federal investigation, do you think anything will ever come of that?
In my opinion, there are only two levers of change that can affect the future of Scientology, which I think is really in an existential moment of decision about its future. One is the IRS, which might reconsider its tax exemption, in which case I think reforms would have to be undertaken inside the church. And the other is these celebrity pitchmen that the Scientologists have used for years to advertise their product. A lot of the credibility of the church, even with its own members, is tied up in these celebrities. And I think they have a moral responsibility to know exactly what's going on inside the church that they're so prominent in advertising. I especially charge Tom Cruise with that, because no one is more important in the history of Scientology, excepting L. Ron Hubbard himself. And Tom Cruise has gotten a lot out of Scientology. He's been given, you know, the many gifts, especially the labor of these impoverished Sea Org members who built an airplane hangar for him and a handcrafted limousine and all that sort of thing. He enjoys the fruits of their labor. He should know what's actually going on inside that, and I think he should take a stern look at it. And I think he owes it to all those people who might be going into Scientology or might have already signed up because of his imprimatur to actually examine those things.
The name of the book is Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. Lawrence Wright is the author. It is published by Knopf. Lawrence, I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. I appreciate it, and it's an amazing book. I thank you very much for your talent and your expertise in sharing it with
us. Thank you, Joe. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief, published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.